Chapter 5, The Evidence of Reptiles and Amphibians.
Scientist and lawyer debate intelligent design theory. Someday, John Calvert, a Christian lawyer, says, science might make a better case for evolution than intelligent design as an explanation for the origins of life. And if that day comes, he'll accept it. But not yet. Peter Gegenheimer, a molecular bioscientist at Kansas University, doesn't buy it. He says, intelligent design proponents already have their conclusion that a godlike designer created life and won't be swayed. He said, the bottom line is that intelligent design meets all the classical definitions of a pseudoscience. Calvert, though, said, the minority who favor intelligent design have unfairly been frozen out of the mainstream scientific community. He said, it's inappropriate for the state to suppress evidence of design and support a naturalistic worldview that supports non-theistic belief systems.
Now folks, I don't know about you, but I sure find it interesting how that scientist could actually call intelligent design a false science. I mean, what have we been seeing that last several chapters? Intelligent design is derived straight from what? Scientific data, right? But not only that, as we've been seeing, those who are deliberately trying to suppress the truth, what are they actually doing? They're actually storing up the wrath of God. And how many of you would say that's probably not a good thing to do? Therefore, in order to help you and I to become the most effective witnesses we can for Jesus Christ, and help these folks out, that's right, we're going to continue in our study called, The Witness of Creation. And what we're doing is taking a look at the five different evidences of creation that God has left behind for us, showing us that He's not just real, but that we really can have a personal, intimate relationship with Him, the Creator of the universe. And the first evidence God left behind for us showing us this amazing truth is the evidence of an intelligent creation. And so far we've seen four evidences of an intelligent creator designing our intelligent world, and that was the evidence of the universe, the evidence of the solar system, the evidence of the human body, and then in the last two chapters the evidence of the animal kingdom. And there we've seen how not only large and small mammals show evidence of God's intelligent design, but last time we saw how birds and fish also show God's intelligent design. And the point was, gee whiz, anybody who's still got all their cornflakes in one box knows that design implies what? A designer, right? And how many of you'd say when it comes to life it had to be God? Hey, you're so intelligent. But that's right, believe it or not, did you know that large and small mammals, and birds and fish are not the only animals showing God's intelligent design? The fifth group of animals showing God's intelligent design is the slimy creatures. But hey, don't take my word for it. Let's listen to God's.
Genesis 1:24-25. And God said, let the land produce living creatures according to their kinds, livestock, creatures that move along the ground, and wild animals, each according to its kind. And it was so. God made the wild animals according to their kinds, the livestock according to their kinds, and all the creatures that move along the ground according to their kinds. And God saw that it was good.
Now folks, according to our text, I think it's pretty clear. The Bible says that God not only created animals that walked on the ground, but He created the what? The animals that move or crawl on the ground, right? But the problem is, what does evolution teach? Do they say, oh yeah, look at all those creepy crawly animals that came from God? Are you kidding? They say look at all the creepy crawly animals that exploded from a blob, right? Therefore, I'd say we better take a look at not just the scriptural evidence but the scientific evidence of these animals that crawl on the ground and see who's telling the truth. How about you? People, we're going to take a look at some interesting scientific facts about some of the slimy creatures out there, starting with reptiles, and you tell me if they accidentally slithered onto the scene.
The gecko. Did you know the gecko lizard is not only good at selling car insurance, but it can stick to almost any kind of surface, to the point where it can run upside down on a ceiling of polished glass without falling off. In fact, it wasn't until recently that scientists could figure out how this little lizard pulled it off. At first, they used optical microscopes to magnify the gecko 2,000 times. When the powerful scanning microscope was invented and turned onto the foot of the gecko, it provided a series of photographs of the foot magnified 35,000. And what they found was that each toe on the gecko's foot had ridges on it with millions of short fibers, or hairs, each of which was a tiny suction cup. The hairs with suction cups are about 1/10 of a millimeter long, with the end of each hair having about 401,000 branches, each ending in a spatula-like structure less than 1/50,000 of an inch. And there are about 3 million of them per square inch. When this was discovered, researchers freely admitted that this was beyond the limits of human technology. Now this is a cool feature for the gecko when it comes to sticking power, but the problem is that it's so powerful that the moment the gecko puts its foot down on a smooth surface, it won't be able to lift it back up again. So what's it do? Well, it just so happens the gecko's foot is also designed so that the toe joints bend or curl up at the ends. And so in this way, he can bend up each toe and unstick them gradually without having to do it all at once, allowing him to move. In fact, it was estimated that one gecko lizard has at least 500 million of these suction cups on his 16 toes.
Snakes. Did you know that snakes are not only creepy but they're amazingly complex? For instance, some snakes come with built-in heat sensors beneath their eyes that enable them to see with a kind of infrared radiation or use them to detect a very slight difference in temperature. For instance, the rattlesnake can use its heat sensors to detect a change of 1/600 of a degree, and the boa constrictor can respond to a fraction of a heat change in just 35 milliseconds.
Oh, but that's not all.
Snakes' eyes are not only a term for throwing dice, but they're also for showing design. For instance, some snakes focus by shifting the whole eye lens forward or back, meaning they can see color far better than we can. In fact, they even come with a kind of contact lens over the eye. And this just so happens to come in handy because snakes must crawl around in the dust and go down holes in the dirt and go between dirty leaves and dusty rocks.
Unless they had this eye protection, they would soon become blind.
Oh, but that's still not all. Some snakes not only have favorable eyes, some of them can fly.
There's a snake in South America, called the paradise snake, which flies from one tree to another.
And it does this by launching itself from a tree limb and then flattens its ribs out real wide so it can glide in the air to a safe landing place, where it unflattens its ribs and crawls away.
But that's still not all.
Some snakes not only have an aerobatic flying ability, they have an awesome eating ability.
It just so happens that some snakes eat eggs, which may not seem like a big deal.
But consider that these snakes are only about 2 feet tall, with a narrow head and slender body, which means this size of snake swallowing an egg would be equivalent to a person trying to swallow a basketball. But that's nothing compared to other snakes that can swallow not just a basketball but a person carrying a basketball. But the question is, how can they do this without choking? Well, it just so happens that some snakes, like the Burmese python, can dislocate their lower jaw and actually move their windpipe out of the side of their mouth so they can continue to breathe out the side of their mouth while they swallow their large prey.
The chuckwalla. The chuckwalla is a desert lizard that lives in the extremely hot Mojave Desert in the American Southwest. It's about 16 inches long and comes with an oversized stomach and a creased, wrinkled, baggy hide that looks like it's several sizes too large. But the question is, why is the chuckwalla so wrinkled with an oversized gut? Well, as it turns out, when an enemy approaches, the chuckwalla lizard knows it's got to crawl into a crevice in the rocks. Why? Because that's where it knows to grip the rock, suck in air, and pump up its body to as much as 300% the normal size, which jams it into the crack so tight, its enemies can't get it out. But that's not all. It just so happens that in the Mojave Desert, there might not be any rain for a full year. So the question is, how does the chuckwalla survive? Well, it just so happens that the chuckwalla knows to emerge every year from hibernation about March 20th, when it proceeds to eat every plant it can find. Then it just so happens, beneath all that super baggy skin it has along its sides are lymph spaces, which he then fills with water whenever it can find it, which keeps him going until he goes back into hibernation. This is obviously very efficient, but there's only one problem. The desert plants the chuckwalla has to eat all grow in alkali soil, which means they're full of salts. In fact, each summer the chuckwalla eats enough salt to kill it. But the question is, how does it stay alive? Well, it just so happens that the chuckwalla comes with nasal passages with tubing-shaped glands connected to ducts that connect to a pool inside each nostril. And then it just so happens that these glands are able to extract the salts, and then drain them in the nose pools, whereby the chuckwalla expels the excess salt out of his nose by sneezing. Question: how could these reptiles ever have evolved slowly over time? And at what stage of development could any of them ever have survived unless all of these features were fully functioning all at the same time?
Now folks, I don't know about you, but I'd say those reptiles clearly show, they not only were but they had to be intelligently designed by an intelligent creator. How about you? In fact, I'd say anybody who says they weren't, is acting like they're a few feathers short of a whole duck, you know what I'm saying? And gee whiz, I guess that's why Soviet mathematician Alexander Polyakov said,
"We know that nature is described by the best of all possible mathematics because God created it."
Own translation? If you think all of life, including those reptiles, were created by chance, you're a few feathers short of a whole duck. Right? Isn't that what he's saying? Of course he is. Why? Because any intelligent person knows that design implies a what? A designer, right? And how many of you'd say when it comes to life it had to be God? Hey, great answer, you're so intelligent. Oh, but that's not all. The second group of slimy creatures showing God's intelligent design is the amphibians. People, we're going to take a look at some interesting scientific facts about some of the amphibians out there, and you tell me if they just accidentally hopped onto the scene.
The Australian frog. Did you know there's a small frog in Australia that has a totally unique method to giving birth to its young? Here's what it does. This frog doesn't have a placental womb as do mammals, nor an outside pouch like the marsupial's outside pouch like many other creatures in Australia have, nor does it lay eggs in a nest on the ground. Instead, it swallows them. As it turns out, this little frog uses its stomach to hatch the eggs. This means that it has the ability to use its stomach both to digest food and as a womb. Here's how it works. When this frog becomes pregnant, the stomach somehow knows to stop its digestion functions and cease to excrete enzymes to now become an incubator where dozens of baby frogs are hatched. And soon the mama frog actually has dozens of live baby frogs crawling around in her stomach. Then once the baby frogs see the hole at the top of the stomach, they know they need to crawl up the esophagus into the mama's mouth where the mama frog proceeds to spit them out. Then, when the last baby frog emerges, the womb suddenly knows it needs to once again revert back into a fully functioning stomach.
The gliding tree frog. Not only does the gliding tree frog never go into water, and instead remains all its life in the trees, and on the ground of the Borneo jungle, but it just so happens this frog comes equipped with webbing between each toe, which it can spread out, just like a duck's foot. But the question is, what good would this do if it never goes into the water? Well, it just so happens these webbed feet help it glide like a little parachute. As it turns out, when the gliding tree frog needs to get around, it uses its sticky toes to climb to the top of a tree as high as 140 feet off the ground. Then it sucks in its neck and stomach so that both are concave curved inward, and then it leaps out into the air. But it's not frog suicide. It's all been carefully planned. Before jumping, it specifically selects a landing spot near the lower part of another tree. Then it uses its range finders in its eyes to calculate the distance between the trees and from the ground to tell it the precise angle needed for its leap, on average some 230 feet. Then downward it goes, twisting its feet slightly as a rudder to help it turn toward the left or right. And at the last moment, it tips up so that it will land with its head facing upward on the tree trunk. And from there it jumps a final 6 feet, and lands perfectly on the ground. Now that's pretty amazing. But what's even more amazing is when you discover that the gliding tree frog does this all at night. But not only that, he lives in the Borneo jungle where the overhead foliage blocks out all light, including starlight, which means he does all his flying in pitch black darkness.
Full-side frog. The South American full-side frog is not only an interesting creature, it's a colorful one. It's about 3 inches long with spots of brown, black, blue, gray, and white all over its skin. Why? Well, it just so happens this allows the false-eyed frog to suddenly change colors simply by masking out certain color spots. And that's pretty cool and all, but why the name, false-eyed frog? Well, it has to do with what this frog does with this color-changing ability. Here's how it works. This frog will be sitting in the jungle minding its own business, when an enemy, such as a snake or rat, will come along. Instantly, the false-eyed frog will jump not to the left or right, but it turns around with its back facing the intruder. Why? Because in that same instant, the frog changes its colors. But not just any colors. When he's done changing colors on his back, he does so in such a specific design that all the enemy now sees are a big head, nose, mouth, and two black and blue eyes with eyes that look so real they even have a black pupil and blue iris around it. Oh, but the false-eyed frog's not done. He then puts its head low to the ground and raises hind parts real high. Why? Because in this position he looks just like a large owl's head, in just the right location, with its eyes staring right at you. Then the frog's hind legs are tucked together underneath his eyes to look like a large mouth so that when he moves his hind legs, the make-believe mouth appears to move. Then it just so happens that to the side of this make-believe face there appears to be some long claws. How? Well, these turn out to be the frog's toes that he purposely lifts up from each hind foot, and then curls them out so they look like a couple of weird hooks. And keep in mind, the false-eyed frog does all this on his back, which means he never sees it. But not only that, he does it all in 1 second. Question: how could these amphibians ever have evolved slowly over time? And at what stage of development could any of them ever have survived unless all of these features were fully functioning all at the same time?
Now folks, I don't know about you, but I'd say those amphibians clearly show they not only were but they had to be intelligently designed by an intelligent creator. How about you? In fact, I'd say anybody who says they weren't is acting like they've got a sticker on their forehead saying, "Warning, objects in mirror are dumber than they appear." You know what I'm saying? And gee whiz, I guess that's why Jim Holt, writer of Science and Philosophy in the Wall Street Journal, said this.
I was reminded of this a few months ago when I saw a survey in the journal Nature. It revealed that 40% of American physicists, biologists, and mathematicians believe in God, and not just some metaphysical abstraction, but a deity who takes an active interest in our affairs and hears our prayers, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob.
Crone translation? If you think all of life, including those amphibians, were created by chance, then you've got a sticker on your forehead saying, "Warning, objects in mirror are dumber than they appear." Right? Isn't that what he's saying? Of course he is. Why? Because any intelligent person knows that design implies a what? A designer, right? And how many of you'd say when it comes to life it had to be God? Hey, great answer, you're so intelligent. Oh, but that's not all. The sixth group of animals showing God's intelligent design is the buggy creatures. People, we're going to take a look at some interesting scientific facts about some of the bugs out there and you tell me if they accidentally crawled onto the scene. But we'll take a look at that in the next chapter.